Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hour number two, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Friday morning. ESPN 102.5 The Game. You just made the list coming up at noon. Bottom of the hour, we'll talk to someone who covers NASCAR. They have decided they are indeed coming back this month and real soon, and they are going to hit the track running for sure with lots of dates, and they're going to try to squeeze a lot in the month of May, and then we'll see if it continues. But we'll get into all that at the bottom of the hour. We'll do a little trivia in the final hour. Right now we say hello and good morning to Predators General Manager David Poile. David, how you doing?
Good, Darren. How are you today?
Doing fantastic. How has quarantine life in the Poile household been?
Well, it's fine. Getting a lot organized at home. Really getting to know my wife really well, although we've already been married for 48 years. So it's all good there. Just certainly anxious and hopeful that when the time is right that we can get back to play and get back to some kind of normalcy. But like everybody else, I mean, we're probably getting a little frustrated because we want things to happen sooner than they really can. So got to show and exhibit some patience here and make sure everybody takes care of themselves so we get in a position where we have a chance to play again.
You probably thought you knew your wife through and through for the last 48 years. Have you learned anything new about your wife during this period? Has she learned anything new about you?
Well, no, I'll answer it a different way. We've actually, in just few moves in the hockey business, and so we've actually done a lot of cleaning up or trying to, downsize a little bit or what have you. So we've actually had some good times going over a lot of old memories from when we first started to date, to marriage, to kids being born and all those things. So I've been going down memory lane. But Now it's time to make some new memories here.
That's cool. That is awesome. Well, we thought we were going to be able to break some news to you as Elliot Friedman joined us yesterday and said he wanted to wrap up the show by saying, or his segment by saying, that he has learned that Milwaukee is not going to get named the champs. We thought we could pass along that because of the circumstances that Milwaukee Admirals would be the champs, but he's claiming that's not going to be the case. So we thought we were going to have good news, but unfortunately not.
Yeah, that's another unfortunate thing, a little selfish, of course, but our farm club Milwaukee was the top team in the American Hockey League, and it certainly looked like they had everybody as good a chance as anybody of being the best team there and winning the championships. And as we all know, those opportunities don't come by every year. So I feel sorry for that franchise, those fans, and of course our players that they didn't have that opportunity to compete for the championship.
No doubt. Did you get a chance to watch the NFL virtual draft this past weekend?
I did. I asked all of our guys to watch. It was pretty good. I anticipate that the NHL draft would be, somewhat the same. I don't think we quite have the coverage. In other words, meaning our players that we draft are from all over the world. So I don't think there'd be the ability to have that access to being in homes or living rooms of Russians or Swedish players or Finnish players for that part. So it'll be a little bit different. I think it'll be all probably, more footage of the player actually playing and what have you. But it was interesting to see some of the layouts and setups that the different coaches and managers had. I got to make sure that there's nothing in the background. I got that pretty clear. So should be interesting. I'm sure it was the same for the Titans and all of the other NFL teams. It would be better if we could be together. It would be better if I could be with a Jeff Kelty and a Tommy Nolan who are running the draft so that we could play off of each other in terms of upcoming picks and what have you. If I'm talking to another team about moving up in the draft or down the draft or have some kind of a deal, but I know it can be worked out, and I'm certainly envisioning it. We'll probably have, you know, multiple TVs and be on a Zoom type of a call with all of our scouts so we can have interaction as the draft plays out. So I think it'll be fine. I think it'll be fine, and it's made for good TV.
No doubt. We weren't sure what we were going to see, but you're right. It all worked out. It seemed like, though, it did affect trading. The trading was down as a whole through seven rounds of the NFL draft. Do you think it'll affect things on the NHL side as well?
Yeah, it certainly could. That's what I thought about the most. And if you remember last year during the draft, that we actually traded at PK Subban, who was obviously a top player and a player that came with a big salary of $9 million cap salary, and the deal was driven by the draft picks. So it certainly made it a lot easier that, in this case, New Jersey GM Ray Shero and myself could be together for multiple meetings, and at the end of the before we made the deal, actually a face-to-face, you know, meeting. So I'm not saying it can't be done, but it certainly will be a little bit more difficult to do that. But the draft is, you know, is the GM's currency, if you will. So, you know, you have draft picks, you know, to acquire players, to get rid of players. If you got money situations that you have to resolve, it's a place to do a lot of different things in addition to just drafting the players. So it'll be a challenge, but the NFL pulled it off pretty good, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to do the same thing in the NHL.
Predators General Manager David Poile on the line with us. We've gone down memory lane a lot since we've been doing these shows here from home, and we've had some really, really good conversations with a lot of cool people and people we have enjoyed talking to. And you get that opportunity, you know, when our kind of with our life coming to a screeching halt and things have slowed down. I don't know if this is not a great memory, but I did want to just harken back on, you know, when you think of this, what do you think of? It's hard to believe, but David, 10 years ago, I think it's today, is unfortunately the 10 years ago of the historic flood that hit our city and that affected Bridgestone Arena and downtown. What do you remember about that time? Because that was, as you know, in an interesting part of time for the Predators at that point.
Yeah. Well, what I remember is I wasn't overly happy because we just lost out in the playoffs. And we brought in our scouting staff, so we were having meetings that morning. And as I walked into Bridgestone Arena, the ice had been taken out, and I just walked into the bowl, and there was this water kind of like a just trickling on the floor. It was, you know, not a flood or anything, just coming out as if it was coming out of a hose or what have you. And then I quickly was told what was happening. Basically, the sewers were getting backed up and what have you, and all of this was eventually coming onto the floor of the Bridgestone Arena. So that little trickle certainly turned into probably a couple of feet of water on that event level in a pretty fast period of time. But because it was coming in so slow at that time, we had plenty of time to move all of our equipment and different things that we could up to you know, a higher level, like say your electronics and video and things like that. Having said that, at the end of the day, it was all basically confiscated or what have you in terms of contamination or what have you. The one thing that that we got out of that is we revamped all of the event floor downstairs and redid our dressing room setup and our weight and conditioning room and some different things like that to give it a totally new look, a modern look or what have you. So out of something that was really bad, we were able to get that done. But that was a terrible time in our history for sure. And again, I didn't realize it was 10 years ago today. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, we were actually, the wife and I were supposed to go to Jimmy Buffett at Bridgestone Arena that Saturday night. And when we saw which looked like a part of a school floating down I-24, we said, well, that's how we're going to Bridgestone. So I don't think we're going to the concert tonight unless we have a boat. We didn't have one. It was crazy just to see the shots, right? Nobody really understood what was going on until we started seeing kind of the aerial shots of, you know, different parts of town. I was like, holy cow, this is really bad. And we know we're getting a lot of rain, but man.
And we saw that, you know, all the, obviously the businesses, bars, restaurants on Broadway and, you know, completely flooded, the, you know, those that had basements and things like that. But I guess as a reminder to us in this time, things came back to normal, and I guess we could say even better than before. So I guess as you bring that up, I'm sort of thinking the same thing as where we are right now. It's no time to be feeling sorry for yourself, is that we are going to get better and this is going to pass, and there'll be something bigger and better that's going to come out of this. It's hard to believe at this moment, but that's what I choose to believe.
Yep.
Yeah, let's hope for the best. David Poile is with us, general manager of the Predators. And David, as we look back, this is something that we wanted to ask you. Around the time, there was the 40th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice here recently, and I think everybody, even people that are nowhere close to being old enough to remember watching that live, and I was just a kid, but they've all seen the movie Miracle, right? So they know the story, and they have watched Jim Craig. But you have a great story about signing Jim Craig to a professional contract. I wonder if you would share that with us.
Yeah, I was being a little bit older than you, Willie. Nice that you put in there that you're just a kid, but I was a grown-up. I had a full-time job. I was assistant GM with the Atlanta Flames, and myself and the general manager, Cliff Fletcher, were in Lake Placid. And it was fantastic, the whole thing. I mean, of course, like so many things in life, you had no idea, had, you know, relatively low expectations of what would happen specifically for the U.S. team. But it was lots of personal stuff involved for me. First of all, when you watch the Miracle, my dad was involved in that. He was the commissioner of this Central Hockey League at the time. And for the first time, they had the Olympic team play as part of the CHL schedule. And Herb Brooks and Craig Patrick, the coach and manager at the time, give this my dad and the CHL all sorts of credit for that level of competition of getting them ready for the Olympics. And then the Atlanta Flames had chosen Jim Craig in the draft a couple of years earlier as a fourth round pick. He went to Boston University, and you know he wins the gold medal, and I think the Olympics ended on a Sunday, I believe, and they went on a whirlwind tour to the White House and different things, and so we made a deal with his agent, and we signed Jim Craig, and I believe he came into Nashville on the Thursday. And I picked him up at the airport. It was about 10 o'clock at night at the Atlanta airport, and there wasn't a lot of people there, but he came off the plane, and at those days there was no security, so you could go right to the gate and what have you. And he came off the plane, and he was kind of stumbling around, like I thought he was maybe drinking or drunk or what have you, but he just gave me a big hug, and he just said, David, I haven't been to bed for 5 or 6 days, and basically had strep throat, and he was just tired. As we were walking through the airport, all people started to recognize who he was because everybody had watched the Olympics and wanted to shake his hand, hug him. Every woman wanted to kiss him. I mean, that was the theme for all the time. Every woman wanted to kiss him. So I took him to the hotel, and then I went home, and my wife comes. I come in the garage. She said, did you get him? Do you have his stuff? Yeah, it's in the trunk of my car. So she wanted to look at his goalie pack. The only time she's ever wanted to see anything. person. So the next day we went down to practice, and it was a bit embarrassing. Most of our team was Canadians, and obviously Craig was an American, and our first goalie, he wouldn't even shake his hand. That's how I guess jealous, you'd say, of the whole thing. So anyway, you got the key to the city and this and that and different things. And then we're playing the Colorado at that time, Rockies, a Saturday night, and sold out crowd, et cetera, et cetera. And he played really well. It was dynamic, et cetera, et cetera. And after the game, Coca-Cola was going to do a commercial for Jim Craig, and you know, with the American flag draped around him, sort of that scene at the Olympics when he was looking for where's my dad, if people remember that, and then all the players were going to get paid, like, I want to say $500. So they, all the guys that didn't like him quickly became a good friend of his, you know. Or, and so we were there to like 1 o'clock.
500 bucks is pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. So we're in the dressing room to about 1 o'clock in the morning just filming the commercial, and then everybody left and went out and what have you. I get a call at 8 o'clock in the morning from the editor of Sports Illustrated, Mark Mulvoy, who is a friend of mine, and he said all the strobe lights at the Omni in Atlanta were not sufficient in terms of how the pitchers were to put Jim Craig on the cover of Sports Illustrated for that week. So if you want him on the cover, you need to get him back to the Omni, and we'll set up some kind of a pitcher. I need to stand in the next three hours. So I called him. I probably just got into the hotel or what have you. So I got the trainers. We were down at the Omni like at 8 o'clock in the morning, and everybody's dead tired or what have you. He put on his Atlanta Flames uniform. They sprayed water on his face, and they took a picture of him sitting in the stall. And that is a picture that you see that went on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Wow.
So that's a pretty interesting story.
Wow.
That is cool. What a whirlwind it was for him. And we're all wondering, David, I mean, if you look at his stats, obviously he was not a great NHL goalie. So do you think that contributed just too much too fast for him in his development? Or why do you think he wasn't a great pro?
It was a fourth-round pick. I mean, I think he was an average goalie. I mean, I don't mean to be descending or what have you. But and then the things that happened after the Olympics and playing for it, it was just too much. I mean, a couple of weeks later, as the season was going on, I think we sent him on vacation because it was almost like he was going to have a breakdown. It was, you know, physically, mentally, it was so much pressure. We were getting basically a sack of mail in our office every day for him, for autographs and, you know, different things, marriage proposals, all sorts of stuff. And it was just too much too soon. And, you know, I think Cliff did the right thing. We actually traded him to Boston, to the Bruins, you know, hometown and what have you. So it was just really, really hard, really hard. You know, just, I mean, I guess the bottom line is hard to live up to what they accomplished as a team. And for him as an individual to replicate that in the NHL.
Chase, go ahead.
We're talking to Predators general manager David Poile here on Darren Donick and Chase. And David, it's good to talk to you. It's been a while, for sure, during
good
all of this.
Good to talk to you guys.
We had,
can't wait to see everybody in person.
I know. I'm ready, too. We had Joel Ward on the other day, and he was one of those that I always said this is a prime example of a bargain bin signing that really turned out to be something. And I know that, you know, you're humble. You don't like to give yourself a ton of credit with some of these things. But can you think back in your time as general manager of a player similar to Joel that you were able to find that you didn't know exactly what he was going to become, but that you just sit back and you go, that worked out. I was really proud of that, proud of our staff that was able to find that player. Is Joel that guy, or is there another one that comes to mind?
Well, hopefully we've had a few of those, but I mean, I think we all really like the Joel's story and, you know, a bit older and trying to turn pro. Again, all the odds are against him. So I love that. So I talked to Joel the other day too, and really happy for him. And I think he should probably get into the game in some way, shape or form, because I think he's got a lot to offer. In Nashville, I mean, a couple of guys come to mind right away. I mean, Vern Fiddler is a player that I think did really well. Could, you know, not drafted, played in the East Coast League for a few years before we took a chance on promoting him to Milwaukee, and you know, he had a terrific career, and we actually brought him back for our best run in 17, and he got a huge game-winning goal for us against St. Louis in game 3 or 4. So and like Patrick Hornquist, the, you know, Mr. Irrelevant, the last pick in the draft in his draft year, and look at the career he's had playing for us and then for Pittsburgh and winning Stanley Cup. So yeah, you know, you need a few of those. How about Pekka Rinne? He drafted in the eighth round or ninth round, whatever it is. We only have 7 rounds right now. Hardly ever played in his draft year because they had a really good goaltender, Nicholas Backstrom, who played in Minnesota and in Calgary, was ahead of him to have the career that Pekka's had. So again, those are great stories, and you know, we need to have those from time to time to put our team together and to be successful. But currently, Joel Ward, that was really happy. 726 games. You never thought that. I don't think anybody thought that for Joel Ward, so that's fantastic.
Wasn't the story on Pekka that you guys actually went to scout Nicholas Backstrom and kind of discovered him?
That's one of those stories. It's like wine. It's getting better with the every year that passes by. Jani Kekalainen, it's true. I mean, Jani Kekalainen, I really got a good feeling about this guy, but he doesn't play very much. And then I got Ray Shiro, who was my assistant at the time, the trip that he went over to see him play. And he said, well, so they're talking. And Jani says, well, better get over to the game early. And Ray said, well, why is that? He said, because if you're going to see him play, you're going to have to watch him in warm-up because he's not playing. And so that's not exactly how we drafted him, but that's probably not too far from the truth, because it was hard to find games that he was playing in, because Matt Backstrom was the number one goalie and he got almost all the games.
Wow. Must have had a good warm-up. David, good stuff. Thanks for joining us. You and the family continue to be safe. And like you said, man, I hope we get a chance to talk in person sooner rather than later.
Yeah, let's hope so. Everybody take care of themselves. Hopefully we're turning the corner here and we'll be back in business and seeing everybody real soon, okay?
Sounds good. Thank you, David. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
All right, that is David Poile, Predators general manager. When we come back, by the way, NASCAR at the bottom of the hour. But we'll come back. More of Darren, Donnick, and Chase next. Good stuff from David Poile. We always enjoy our conversations with him. John Roberts coming up here soon. Covers NASCAR for Sirius XM. Willie, good job getting David to tell that story. I don't think, heard a lot of great stories from David over the years. I don't think I remember that one. That was pretty cool, especially the Sports Illustrated, the front cover. That was a great story.
Can you imagine what that was like for Jim Craig? It's amazing he didn't completely break down. I wonder how often he is a public speaker and he has told many stories many years. I wonder how often he gets into that part of his life, because, you know, that lightning in a bottle, that performance he had at the Olympics is amazing. And so we had that discussion when the 40th anniversary came around and they put the movie on, and Bob Costas was on there, and Al Michaels was on there. They had some great interviews in retrospect of the people involved. You know, we were talking to Richard Deitch about his interview with Ken Dryden. How about the story about the Flames wouldn't even shake his hand when he came out there? All these Canadian guys like, we don't really care what you just did. Who cares? I mean, this is the NHL. We got to beat the Montreal Canadiens tonight or whatever. Welcome to the league, rookie.
Right.
You're not taking my job.
I'm not surprised by that at all, though, but it's still fun to hear it, right?
Yeah. Well, how about coming off the airplane? He's sick as a dog, and he hugs David Poile. I was going to ask David if he got strep throat because he hugged. And how many people got strep throat trying to hug him at the airport? All the girls wanted to kiss him and stuff, and he had strep throat?
Yeah. Yeah, we think about that stuff a little bit differently in these times, don't we?
Yes, yeah. Especially.
I was about
right
to say
now,
that
sure.
Hits a little close to home right now.
I told it you, does. I hope we're forced to all wear masks in the cold seasons when we get on planes. I hope that's the case. I think we've been way too loose. You know, I hope we have to wear masks during cold and flu season. But a lot of people will be healthier, I think.
Yeah,
you know what?
Probably not a
bad
idea.
Maybe bring down the healthcare industry a little bit, right? Less people filing claims. Less trips to the doctor. That would be nice, huh? What a concept. All right. Also, what a concept. Sports actually going to happen. Something live to talk about? What? Yeah, they're about to hit the track. We talked about it at the beginning of the show. Now we're going to talk about it with John Roberts, who covers the sport of NASCAR for Sirius XM. John, how you doing?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on, especially here when we have some, at least some good news.
Yeah.
About the world of sports coming back.
Yeah, you should have a little bit more pep in your step as we head into the weekend. NASCAR kind of being the first to come out and say, we're coming back. What did you make of the news?
Well, I kind of expected it overall, because I think it really makes good sense to have NASCAR lead the way on getting back. First of all, there's a tremendous business aspect when it comes to NASCAR. If you take one of the top teams, for example, Hendrick Motorsports, they employ over 350 people. So when you shut that down, that's a big chunk of the workforce, around that area. But also another thing about having NASCAR lead the way is these are really big outdoor venues. I mean, we're going to Darlington, which is about a mile and a third, mile and three-eighths racetrack with a tremendous amount of space in the garage area. Then you come up to Charlotte, which is a mile and a half racetrack. So there's plenty of room to make this work and to make this work safely. And for another thing, when it comes down to it, that the competitors aren't on one another like they are in basketball and in hockey and football. There's a tremendous amount of physical contact. Once a driver gets in his race car, I don't think it matters that much to them at that point whether there's fans in the stands or not. So all around, I think it makes really good sense. And this morning I was talking to a couple of different general managers of race teams, and they're taking it one step further. What they're doing is normally everybody's kind of around a car. You get it on the hauler and you send it to the racetrack. Some guys stay back and some guys go. Well, they're separating their crews out to where the guys are going to load the car on the hauler, and then you're going to get the hauler driver in there. And all he's got to do is drive 2 hours down the road to Darlington. No airplanes, no hotels involved in this thing. And then the guys that are going to pit the car or work on the car at the track, they're going to find their own way down there without making contact with the guys back at the shop. So I think it all makes really good sense, and I'm pretty dang confident here, guys, that this is going to be a safe event.
Do they feel good about the response they got from just, we just watched a virtual NFL draft. We're all very accustomed to Zoom these days. Did they feel good that they got a nice response for people watching iRacing, watching these guys basically play a video game? I mean, a really cool video game, but airing that, did they feel good about it?
Absolutely. Everybody was really excited about that. The thing I liked about that was I always kind of hate when people say, oh, we got a problem. You should not. I don't think we ever have a problem. I think we have just questions that need to be answered. So a lot of people had gotten together and said, okay, well, here's our problem. We don't have racing to broadcast. So instead of saying, let's just pack it up and go home, a bunch of guys put their heads together and said, hey, we can broadcast this virtual racing stuff, which is absolutely the realism, I think, is incredible. I think it's incredible that the computer knows when your tires are wearing down, or when the last time you pitted was. And just as an example, guys, about how there were a couple races towards the end of last year, actual live races that were on NBC Sports Network, and the viewership was about 1.2 million people for the actual real race. Well, the virtual race from Talladega on Fox got almost a million viewers. So it tells you what the response was to that, and it was really good.
We watched, like I said, the virtual NFL draft and their ratings. Now, look, it's the NFL. They get ratings anyway. They're the top dog in sports, but their ratings were through the roof, and that shouldn't have been expected, or that should have been expected because of the times that we're in. Sports fans were just craving anything, and so they were able to capitalize on that, and they had monster ratings. I mean, heck, we're getting monster ratings for something that isn't live in The Last Dance on Sundays, on ESPN. They're getting monster ratings. How can NASCAR, being the first back, get some new eyeballs on their product and maybe have a chance and an opportunity here in this unfamiliar window to actually gain new fans?
Well, again, sometimes out of adversity comes the best thing sometimes. When Ryan Newman, it seems like it was a couple years ago, but it was only a couple months ago, when Ryan Newman had that horrific wreck at Daytona, it no longer was just a sporting event. All of a sudden, that was front page news. That not only did this thing look so terrible, but Newman survived it, and that brought a lot of new pairs of eyes to the following races out west at California and Las Vegas. So I think what's going to happen, and this happened in the past when things have gone on in the sport of NASCAR, that you get a tremendous amount of new viewers. And it's no question that the viewership and the attendance of NASCAR has waned a bit over the years. And I think if people do tune in that aren't used to watching these races, that there's going to be people say, hey, man, I just want to see sports. I just want to see competition. And I just want to see something live on TV. And NASCAR's probably going to be able to hook a few more fans because Darlington is a very exciting racetrack. It's one of the best places for good finishes and good racing.
John Roberts with us talking NASCAR. And I know that Steve O'Donnell said that that the Southern 500 would stay Labor Day weekend at Darlington. So essentially they're going to have three races. We don't know what the rest of the schedule is going to look like, if they're going to try and keep it as is. And I think a lot of that depends on, you know, the states that these tracks are in. But if you had to guess, what are we looking at beyond May 27th when they leave Charlotte? Do you think they try and make up Homestead in Texas, or how does that look?
Most likely that's the way it looks because the teams have already prepared cars for those racetracks and they have them sitting in the shop. So that could be the first one. One of those two could be the first that you see somebody, you see the sport actually traveling to. The unique thing about NASCAR, though, is you know, you have every competitor in the sport competing at the same venue on every weekend. No other major league sport is like that. It's a big traveling circus. So that is the reason for this whole idea of these races in the next month of May all being as close to home as you can. About 90% of race shops are located within 30 miles of Charlotte. So that's why that's the home base. That's why they're going to get a lot of racing done there. But, man, you're right. Somebody is going to lose a race here. There's going to be a racetrack somewhere. And I hate it because it's one of my favorite events of the season. A lot of the talk is that Sonoma loses because it's so far out west and it's scheduled soon, that's probably going to be one of the first big losers in this thing. Because what it does now, SMI is the company that owns the racetrack. They're going to get their TV revenue for an event, whether they race at Charlotte or Sonoma. But what happens, it's the mom-and-pop grocery stores, the restaurants, the hotels that are around Sonoma. Those are the ones that are going to lose out of this whole big thing. But, yeah, that's the big question, and that's why I think NASCAR wants to see how a fanless race goes with no airplane, no hotel stay necessary, one-day shows with no practice and qualifying, and then you see where it is after that. I think they're in a little bit of wait and see right now, but I think you're right there when you say it's probably either going to be Homestead or Texas because the equipment's already prepared.
You know, a lot of us that cover the sport like yourself, you know, we've been hearing midweek races for years, that has been a possibility for the sport, even as soon as next year with 2021 with that schedule. Now we get to see what it looks like with these races, whether it's Xfinity or Trucks or even Cup, at Darlington and Charlotte. I'm very excited about this because with Nashville potentially being on the horizon, you know, could that be a possible? You do a Wednesday night at Nashville and then a Saturday night at Bristol. What do you think about that and what they're trying to gain out of this experimenting because they're able to do it?
Well, their hand is kind of being forced, and I don't say that in a negative way. I say it in a positive way. That they, when Steve Phelps took over as president, he said that 2021 was going to be the year that they redo the schedule in a big way, because NASCAR had a 5-year contract with every racetrack, so you knew where you were going to be racing, what date it was going to be on, for those 5 years. That contract expires this year. So no one is guaranteed a race, and no one is guaranteed a particular race weekend after this. So the idea of weeknight races, the idea of doubleheaders, and even now the idea of shorter races, people have been clamoring for shorter races for years. And that only makes sense because the American attention span is for this 4-hour race event. Sometimes they just seem endless at times. So the hand is being forced somewhat to experiment with some of these things. And I love the creativity of the front office of NASCAR to, instead of shortening a race, changing the name of it So now I see they don't have to change any logos or anything. Now it's 500 kilometers. So it's still the Southern 500. You just don't have to change the T-shirts or anything like that.
I know. It works out perfectly. John Roberts here with us talking some NASCAR. How big is it that Matt Kenseth is coming back with the situation with Kyle Larson? It's a very unfortunate one for everybody involved. Chip Ganassi has no choice but to move on. But to bring in somebody like Matt Kenseth to run that car that he's so respected in the sport with the sponsors and, as you said earlier, of trying to get, you know, some new eyeballs on the sport and fans that maybe had gone away, they know the name Matt Kenseth. How big is that for the sport?
Well, it's huge for the sport, and I think it was good for Ganassi Racing to think like that. We initially thought, I mean, everybody's kind of saying, well, this young man Ross Chastain, who's an up-and-coming talent, was going to take over that car. That was a popular theory. But when we spoke to Matt just the other day, he told us that he was just sitting at the house, not even thinking about it. And a gentleman by the name of Max Jones, who is one of the business partners of Ganassi Racing, called him up and said, hey, man, what would you think? And he said, well, let me mull it over for a couple of days. So he said he sat down with his wife, and what they were talking about was, hey, this is a great thing. Because he left it because of the grind. You know, he left because of the huge long season. I mean, other sports start and end within the NASCAR season. And so he had talked it over with his wife and said, here's a chance for me to go back race. And I'm sure, you know, a few $1 million can always change your mind about what you want to do. And so for him to jump back in the car, the situation's good for him because the shorter weekends that we're not going to have. And cramming three-quarters of a year worth of racing into about half a year is what it almost boils down to. And to get behind the wheel of a very competitive car, the 42 car was running seventh in points after the first four races of the season. So he knows he's getting an established car. Now, his teammate also, him and Kurt Busch are really good buddies off the track. So now he's going to be teammates with Kurt Busch. So I think there's so many positives about that whole thing. You get some old Matt Kenseth fans that are going to get fired back up. He's got a good ride to drive in. And also now, Chip Ganassi and the 42 team, they have a really, really good driver guaranteed for the rest of this year. And Matt told us the other day that he doesn't know what's going to happen beyond that. He could maybe stick around or maybe just hang it back up again.
We're talking to John Roberts, and, of course, we're talking NASCAR. They have made the decision to get going here very, very soon. And, John, with that in mind, I know there's probably a lot of sports entities that will be watching closely to see how it goes, and we've got our fingers crossed that everything goes smoothly here. I'm curious what we should be looking for in terms of any measures they're taking social distancing. Now, we know, you know, the driver's sitting by himself. That takes care of itself. But pit crews and the garage and that area where people tend to be a little closer together, are they going to adjust at all for that?
Yes, absolutely. And what, you know, I heard somebody the other day talking about, you know, what you want to do in this situation. They say, well, give it the kid test. Would you send your kid to something? And after what I have heard and been told, if one of my kids worked on a race team, I would have absolutely no problem sending them to the racetrack. I would not be worried about it because NASCAR's worked with local health officials and government officials. In order for you to go to a racetrack, your company has to, your race team, they are going to test you and screen you back at home. You are going to get tested and you're screened or whatever. You're going to get your temperature taken or whatever you need to do before you go into the racetrack. And then once you get inside the racetrack, they're going to keep the team separated. And we've already, just from last year to this year, NASCAR has said for a cost-saving thing, you only bring nine guys to the racetrack now anyway, or gals, nine men or women on your team. And therefore, there's fewer people already. The garage this year is already more spread out. And again, you know, these racetracks are over a mile in length. Charlotte's a mile and a half in length. These are big infields and big garage areas that can, at times, hold three different race series. So So they're only going to have one series at a time, whether it be the Cup, Xfinity, or Trucks. There's going to be plenty of room in there, and you're going to have to be screened twice as a competitor before you get to the racetrack. So I feel very confident in what they're going to do, and I think, you know, I don't want to sound insensitive at all to anybody who's gone through anything with this, but I really feel safe. I would go now, and I would send my children to a racetrack right now.
What kind of media access do people like yourself have? What kind of access will people be having actually covering the race at the track?
Teleconferencing. Media will stay in the media center. And normally, you know, you'd roam the garage. And that's one of the really good things about – that's one of the great things about NASCAR. You know, you could be standing. I remember I was taking a guy years ago. He was an NBA player, and he was going to the racetrack with us. And he said, you mean I can, like, walk right up to Dale Earnhardt Jr. right before he gets in his car? I said, yes, you can. And he said, it was funny, the guy was joking around. He said, if I wanted to, I could slap Dale Jr. on the back of the neck. And I said, well, I wouldn't recommend it. But, yes, you could do that.
You might slap back.
You could always mingle right with the race teams and with the drivers. And that was what made it so you know, a real enjoyable sport to cover because of the access. But now, now instead of, you know, wandering the garage area and talking to guys right after practice, they want the media to stay in the media center and in the press box. And if, you know, they'll bring certain high profile guys. And I think that, from what I understand, some of the NASCAR PR guys with some of the regular media, there's someone in particular you need to talk to or want to talk to, they'll bring them to a you know, a camera in a Zoom type of environment, and you can get your interview there. So there'll still be media covering it, and it won't be that much different, I don't think. You just won't be standing right next to the guy.
Good stuff, John. Really appreciate the visit. You continue to be safe, and thanks for doing this. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, hey, very, very important question, though. First important question here. Is it Derek that has the German Shepherd?
Darren, me?
Darren, yeah.
Yeah.
Darren.
Yeah, I've got two German Shepherds, yep.
Awesome. I have one, and I love her to death. So we're basically somewhat related by owning – we're owned by German Shepherds.
Oh.
So.
Yes.
Look, John, I have had German Shepherds in my life pretty much my entire adult life. I love that breed.
So incredible. I love the breed.
Yeah, I've got a big male and a female. So they're frickin' frack.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Hey, thanks for doing this.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me on, guys. Anytime.
All right, that is John Roberts, covers NASCAR for SiriusXM. We'll take a quick break, come back, and wrap up the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. You just made the list coming up at noon. Marquise bringing it. This should get you excited heading into the weekend. Good stuff this hour. David Poyle. And then John Roberts, a good discussion with him talking about NASCAR coming back. And indeed, they will be on the track here very, very soon as we sit here on the first day of May. You just made the list coming up at high noon. Don't forget, we've got trivia in the final hour, and we are excited about the rest of the show. Now, I've tweeted out something, guys. I want you three to get involved, but just because I want to know your number. As the numbers start rolling in, it's the picky eater test. It's just got a list of things, you know. Some of them are condiments, but you get a negative point, or I guess a point for every food that you, or something you will not eat. And I just would be curious your number. Is it high or is it low? So just take a look at it if you get a chance. Before we get out of here today.
Okay, I will tweet that out.
Because I honestly don't know how. What category? I know a lot about you guys, and I feel like I could comfortably answer a lot of questions. I'm not sure about your eating habits. I think
now,
Chase,
where am I finding this again?
I just tweeted it out probably in the last, I don't know, 5 minutes or so.
Okay.
I should have included you guys. My bad. My bad. I don't know why I didn't do that. Brain cramp. I think Chase is going to be the
lead. I'm pulling it up here.
Chase and Marquise. will be the loosest. Actually, Chase will be the loosest. He'll have the lowest number. This is my prediction. Chase will have the lowest number. Marquise, the second lowest. Willie will have the highest number.
Well, let me specify something real quick. So if I don't eat some of this stuff, but it's in shakes, what if it's like in a smoothie? Because sometimes when stuff's in smoothie form, I can actually tolerate it.
You're kind of drowning it out.
In a soup.
I think
it's got to be a standalone.
It needs to be a standalone.
Yeah, it's going to have a hot number.
Are you talking about like a banana? Is that why you're saying like banana?
Well, no, but there's certain fruits and there's certain vegetables that I would not eat like whole.
That you would eat in a shake?
When it's in a smoothie, like if it's in one of these like healthy smoothies, like a dab of avocado
like
or something.
Strawberries?
Yeah.
Okay, avocado shake?
You know, sometimes people put like avocado in shakes. I'm telling you. I'm on some healthy stuff, man. I've been drinking some very weird stuff in these last couple weeks, man. I'm telling
you. You're at a different level than me right now.
It's pretty.
Avocado shake. Yeah, I think I'm out on that.
It's like a smoothie, like a healthy smoothie. You know, but it's like a dab of. It's not like I'm throwing a whole avocado in a smoothie. Okay. It's just like a dab of avocado.
Okay.
So I
think you need to. It doesn't have to be like where you just have to. Just take a big spoonful and eat, but you have to eat, you know, if you're okay, take it away from the shake form.
If you order
a meal and it comes with avocado, then you eat it with the meal. You know what I mean? Not drowned out in a chocolate shake.
Gotcha.
Okay, so the number that I put out is the number of items that I don't eat.
You get a point for everyone that you will not like for me, like just like beets. Like there's nothing you could do. I would just choose to starve than to eat a beet. Like I'm out. So that's a point. Like I'm not eating a beet.
My number is 10.
Oh, that's actually higher than I thought.
There's one item on here. That
like raw fish. I'm not eating raw fish.
Yeah, no. I don't eat. Well, hang on. Sushi's raw fish, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Then my number is 9. Because I do like sushi. So there we go. So
like
I'm not,
tofu is a big one. Yeah, like that's tofu. A divisive one. Like people are all in or people are all out, right? You're out or you're all in on. I feel like there's no in between.
There is an item on this list that I cannot stand. I hate it and I've always hated it.
Give me the one you hate the most on this list.
It's going to surprise you. That's what I'm getting at.
Okay.
Watermelon.
Ooh, really?
Wow.
Cannot stand watermelon.
I'm not a fan, but I would eat it.
No, I won't.
I didn't count it. I would eat it. And I, like, you know.
Tomatoes have to be prepared a certain way. Like, I hate a tomato on my sandwich, but I used to not touch them at all. Oh, yeah. No, I won't eat a tomato on the sandwich. Now, if it's chopped up in a salad or something, I'm good.
Yeah, so I think that qualifies. I've thought about tomatoes. I'm not crazy about tomatoes, but So standalone, like sliced tomatoes.
Would you put tomatoes on your salad, or do you pick them off? If you pick them off,
obviously if they're diced up, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
I don't have the big chunky ones. Yeah,
nope,
I toss them.
Like you can't say I like ketchup, so tomatoes count. You know what I mean? Like it's not that you're missing the point.
No, but.
Yeah, but what if you have a thin sliced tomato on a sub
on a hamburger
sandwich,
then you
is that okay?
Right. Yeah, I'm not asking you to pick up a tomato and take a bite out of it like an apple. I don't even do that. But I love tomato. I mean, I'm fine with tomatoes.
So there's a couple technicalities there.
It's how they're prepared.
I mean, will you eat a BLT or is it just a BL? Right? I'll eat a BLT.
I prefer a BL.
Really? Okay.
But like I said, there are certain ways that a tomato is prepared that I'll eat it. Like, if it's chopped up and it's cooked all day long. But sliced on a sandwich, I usually just take it off.
Oysters are a no. I mean, that's a big no.
Oysters for the first time, I kid you not, in my life, 2 years ago at SEC Media Days. We all went out for dinner because there was somebody that just loved oysters and said, you have to have them, and if you're going to be here, you got to at least try them. And I did, and I thought I was going to throw up.
Yeah.
When I was a teenager, my score would be a lot higher than it is today. Is that fair? Is that
really
true for you guys?
I've gotten better over the years.
I've never been viewed as a picky eater at all. Like, I've never been viewed that way, but there were certain things, a la tomatoes, that I wouldn't touch. Like, for instance, sour cream, forever, I hated it. Didn't want anything to do with it. And in the last year, I have gotten where I'll eat sour cream.
The first half of my life, my number would be double. The second half,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
My number's cut in half.
Like Brussels sprouts wouldn't do.
I'm saying I've gotten better with age. Like
I've gotten better. I've gotten less picky.
Okay, I thought you were saying the opposite.
Yeah.
Like you've gotten worse with age. I'm like, huh.
No. I think there are some things that are an acquired taste, for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like eggplant is on my list. I'm not doing eggplant. Not doing it.
Yeah.
Beets are no. Snails are no. No. So there's something like my number is a hard no, you know, and it's not like, like it is mainly a heck no, no chance.
Yeah,
so
I'm
be curious, but compile the numbers, could put your list.
I'll compile the number during the break here.
I already tweeted it out.
So you are standing firm with 9?
Yep.
Okay. I'll be curious to see where
9. Wow.
Marquise and Willie go with theirs. All right, we'll come back. You just made the list to kick off the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.